separated, I believe I was two. My daughters were 5 and 6 at the time. So
I remember going and seeing my dad and stuff when I was a kid, and I remember us living, you know, and we were separate. And my mom met a man who became my stepdad. They had 2 kids, and he was a full-blooded Italian, and that's where I first started seeing some things kids shouldn't see. He had a kegerator in the house. He made his own wine. He was everybody's pal. I'd be everybody's pal. But, you know, when everybody go home, when we had to hurry up, shut the lights out, go to bed, I watched a man beat my mother. She still carries scars today. God bless her. So it was just a really, like, chaotic kind of childhood. You know, when my sisters were born, they were treated differently, of course. There was my two older brothers and me, and I was 8 when my sisters were born. By the time my second sister was born, we had moved out, and my mom began life again as a single mom. I love my mom. She's like my rock. She's a very strong woman. She put herself through school and became a welder, right? Many years before, she had met my dad, and he was in the military. She would come down here. He was stationed at Little Creek. And anyway, so fast forward, we ended up moving here because she was familiar with it. They had come down here on the weekends years before. Just a lot of drinking. We became homeless. Not that my mother didn't work. She couldn't do it by herself. I became a full-blown adult at 14. Quit school. I was always some kind of leader, though. I got 2 people back in school at 2 different parts of my life that decided I was going to go back to school, and I didn't make it, but they did, you know? I was like, I'm there for you, I push you to do it, but, you know, I guess I'm just not ready to yet, you know? So, let's see, sorry. 14, I started working full time. I got a worker's permit. Let's see. I just remember sitting at Jimmy's Hot Dogs down there in Virginia Beach off the boulevard. I sit back there, and her friend, they'd drink case beer. We worked in a warehouse, you know, Old Dominion Tobacco. And just put that beer on your tab. We did. You know, and they'd just sit in the front seat after work. We all worked in a warehouse and busted our ass, you know, and then I'm just like one of the adults. I'd lay in the back seat, drink my beer, and smoke my cigarettes, you know. But, you know, and raising, helping raise two sisters, which led me, I think, you know, looking back, of course, I had daddy issues. You know, in retrospect, you always know, I think it was for support or some kind of, I don't know, I got married at 18 to a man that was 35, and he was in the military, he was our neighbor, you know, all through my life we were the party house, just saying, I mean, all through all of them years we were the party house, I had 2 older brothers, Mom was a cook, you know, we were the place to go. We always said we put the fun in dysfunction, you know. So we were, yeah. I don't want to get carried off onto the wrong path, but yeah, so 18 I got married. Partying, and, you know, I remember taking a trip with them. And I ate the wrong cheeseburger, and he punched me in the face, you know. You know, this is all drinking. I allowed myself. So, you know, everybody bet that I wouldn't stay with him for 3 years, so I stayed with him for 5, you know. very abusive, drinking. I worked for 14, so I was at another job at 18, worked for a grocery store, 10 years there, 11 years in the grocery business. And so in that time, I had two children, and we were doing pretty good. Everyone in my family is sick, very sick, you know. So I saw a lot of, you know, turmoil in the family and things like that during that period, but we were still all partying together, and at night, you know, start fighting, and, you know, what I was noticing, we were drinking more, like, we weren't just drinking beer no more, we were drinking the bottle, and I looked at my sisters, and they're 10, I was 8, so 8 years younger, and 6 years younger, 10 years younger, and, I'll never drink from the bottle, you know. I'll never put my lips to the bottle and drink like that, you know. You know what? But a couple years later, I was joining them, and my dad was a different dad than them, and there's some crazy chicks. And we would get to tussling and fighting, you know, in front of mom and all that, you know, so craziness. And so I did stay to myself for a while and kept my little family good, and still partying. Most of my partying was, I didn't get a hold of a lot of drugs during my day because I already knew I couldn't afford it. You know, I could barely afford my drinks. So my money went towards drink, and if you had something, I'd be happy to take it, you know? Or I'll be happy to, you know, people are happy to share, and I you know? So 5 years, I stayed with that man for 5 years, and I jumped out of the frying pan right back in, and left him at the beginning of the month, and I did have a pregnancy test, so I was very proud of myself for that I was not pregnant, but ended up pregnant at the end of the month by a guy that was just a great guy, I thought he was, so we had the two kids there, got married to him, and we did a lot of partying too, but he was doing other partying I wasn't aware of. We smoked weed, of course, but he was getting into crack, I think. Crack or, I don't know, you know, I don't know. I'm so naive, I didn't know. Something flipped in me during them years, and I just got just hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, just fed up with a man that lied all the time. Just a lot of things. I won't put your way through that, but my stepdad passed, and that was really hard. It was really hard on my mom. And what did we do? We moved in on my mom, and we started partying our asses off. You know, the people from Waring's gym brought over a pound of weed. Here you go for Skip passing. You know, that guy, we loved him. You know, just split between the kids. You know, and you know, me and my mom went on this like vacation of drunk days. That we just decided to go everywhere they got drunk at down the ocean front. You know, and everybody knew my stepdad. It was very hard. He had cancer and it lymphoma 4, and he went really fast, and it was awful because it was the first time in my mom's life that she found love, and he was the first person in my life I would call a stepdad, you know. So moving along after he passed, I just started partying. I would go to work. I would take care of my kids, put my kids to bed at night, and go down to the beach. And my brother was going through a divorce, and he was a shit show, even worse than me, you know, because he wasn't even working. So he was drunk 24/7 at this point, you know. But I knew somebody I could always party with or take with me, you know. And we traipsed around the ocean front. There was times I had really good times partying, and I won trips through my work. When I worked for the cable company, moving a little ahead, worked for the cable company for 11 years, and I went on trips to like Hollywood, the last episode of The Sopranos on Jamaica. I didn't know, but years later I found out I almost lost my job on one of them trips, you know. I took a drunker person every damn time, I think. You know, I won this trip, but I ain't taking you because you were made an ass of yourself. So I take this one, and that one's worse. Remember, we carried my sister. We had to carry in Hollywood, and the we're by the big mansion hotel, right? They didn't care who was in the damn P. Diddy or somebody, but not him. But listen, it was.
No,
it's somebody, you know, they're all getting pictures and they got the cameras and shit, and here's my sister all passed out, laid out, you know. Oh, this is great, you know. But guess what? Rachel partied on, right? And I was in the damn penthouse that night, and I could not tell you who I saw, who was there, none of it. But you know, I missed out. I missed out on the stuff that was supposed to. You know, they lay out the little thing you're supposed to do. You know, I was too hungover because I stayed up till 4 the first night, you know, jumping around on them mattresses they have sex on and stuff out there in Hollywood. They had these big mattresses laid out. It was crazy. I'm just saying. I was a wild child when I got off my leash, and I think that's why I just needed to stay married or something, you know. But on my, I became a real, real mess. I just walked out of my job one day. Just walked out, almost 10 years. I thought I was losing my mind. Got my 401k, paid for my mom and myself to get a place. I used that money and I partied like a rock star. I'm gonna tell you, I shit you not. I blew that money. But I got a little beater car. And I got us a place to live. And during that time, there were people really in my life that were really rooting for me, but I was such a shit show. I felt like I just was having a nervous breakdown. I was in the middle of separating from my two boys' dad. And really, I don't think he ever did anything wrong, y'all. I mean, we could have got help for the crack, huh? You know. But when we separated, he went downhill. He lived with the same people, like they ended up being a little family ever since. My boys and my first two boys and my dad, I'm sorry to throw this out here, go back and forth, but my first two boys, Dad, let's see, my first year, I'm getting lost, hold on. My first two boys and father, his name's Mel. He just died from this disease in May. And then 2.5 weeks later, his roommate that he lived with. My boys are 28 and 26, right? And we split up when my boys were 8 and 10. He died, his roommate died like 3 weeks later. His female, it was a husband and wife. So this guy lost his best friend and his wife from this disease. I always felt bad, but I did have moments with him, and I was able to make amends with him. I ended up getting with someone I worked with, had the old work affair. I had another child, so now my kids, I have three boys, 28, 26, and 16. And that was a very tumultuous, chaotic relationship, but he offered to help take care of my mother, not only my two sons, but my mother, and for once I had stability. But it didn't come without repercussions or not, whatever. There was just we worked together, so he was a manager in another department, and he was seen as a very high respected person. But they didn't see what I saw at night, and I saw the devil one night. Let me tell you, I seen black eyes, and I seen him foam at the mouth. He loved seeing me drunk. He enabled me to drink. I'm not blaming any of it on him, because I just more, and we party in the garage. We didn't go to bars no more. But there were a lot of things that happened in that garage that never should have happened, and it took me quite a while to get away from him. But if you think about it, it's a repeating habit from my mother, and I'm sorry. I love my mother, you know. She is the rock of my family. She kept us together. But during that time, when I was younger, back then we were homeless several times. We lived in a campground. We lived in the hotel. Me, my mom, and my two sisters. You know, my one brother went in the Marine Corps, and he would send money. My mom worked like 20 blocks. Two block to work every day down at the oceanfront. So I was in a little period where you end up in the little campground and shit like that. Just telling you about just a little couple stories there. I have so many. I have so many. That was to the point where I was going on two wheels to work. I was always 10 minutes behind in my life. I would get there on time, and I was always in withdrawals. I was in constant withdrawals, so I was in constant stomach. I had the stomach thing, the throat stomach thing, where you'd be gagging, but you needed that drink just to get you up in the morning. I was sleeping with my bottle. I was being found passed out in my car with my bottle. I got a DUI with my brother, and almost put him through the windshield. And he's dying today, and he's been dying for several years from this disease. And my 76-year-old mother takes care of him today. That accident changed my life. And not to throw another story in, but I was with a terrible man at that time, really terrible man. And it's the worst experience of my life with abuse. And when we were coming down here on Portsmouth Boulevard, I remember going over these bridges and getting away from here. Just having panic attacks or just being really shit-faced in the morning from driving home, laying on a mattress in a trailer somewhere. So many little things, you know, happen along the way. But when I got that DUI, when they say God brought me to AA and AA brought me back to God, I was not willing at first. I just had to get a paper signed and get through this DUI crap. And then I had the machine in my car. And then I started blowing on the machine wrong, because, you know, you think you can eat and drink all the way up to this time, you stop. You know, you don't have to smell alcohol in the morning when you blow, you know, the machine. Called my blow and go. I was going to jail on the weekends, and one weekend I didn't pay right, and I ended up there for 5 days straight. I mean, I just kept doing this stupid shit. I'd get through the class and do it wrong, and they put me back through, and I was just going insane, doing all these things for these people out here, but trying to work and doing this and that. Somehow in there, these little weekends and these little spots and that blow and go, but at first I didn't learn my lesson. I really fought it, y'all. So I had to go to court over violating the machine, and the judge said, "Do you know how many times you violated it?" And I said, "No, judge, 12 times. Just trying to get to work in the morning." So there's a lot of back and forth, you know. I was stubborn, but all these different meetings, and it started sinking in, and it started going from here to here, you know. There's just no doubt about it. I always believed in God. My grandfather was a minister. But I felt like I turned my back on God. I hadn't really spoken or really prayers. You know, the foxhole prayers, like when I was sitting in, you know, right before court, you know, get me out of this type of stuff. My prayers started to have a meaning. I started being grateful. I started going to the meetings on Saturdays that I didn't want to get up for, you know. And I started going to the meetings. First, I'm like, look, I don't have to get my paper signed, you know. But that was before I slipped up again and ended up with a machine in my hand and in my car, okay? As I said, I did 21 days straight, and the judge said, all right, we got this new thing. But, you know, my mom was like, more money, that's all they want. You should have done it right in the first place, blah, 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 you know. So now I have a machine that I have to blow in, I think it was every 4 hours, and one in my car. Damn thing saved my life, though. By the time I had to get all that crap off, I've been in that damn rooms for 2 years. You know, that little 6 month DUI. That's what it took, y'all. It just started sinking in. And I found my family, and I felt like I finally fit in, and I finally have the good feeling in your stomach, you know, the healthy feeling. It was like I would come here and get my healthy stuff, and then I would have to go home and absorb that, you know. But I'd get back here to get more, and I was getting fed, and I was loving it. I went to meetings. I would go to the 7:30 a.m. meeting and get the people, you know, that really want recovery, that are there cracking on, you know, up. And then I would get to work, and my you know, people, places, and things. So my ride home would no longer be straight to the liquor store and the grocery store. I went the back way to New Day. And I would go to New Day every night after work. And it was the newer people, you know, so I get to chill and hang out with the newer people, and I have maybe one more day than you. And that's how it happened. And I did get a sponsor, of course. I got a sponsor, I didn't trust her. And that was during that little 21 days jail. Right before that, she said, maybe she scared me, maybe she scared the bejesus out of me, maybe. She said, are you ready to do your fourth step? I walked out, got me a mini. I was like, I ain't ready to tell nobody this shit. Nobody wants to hear all this. Nobody. We didn't share secrets, and my mom came from a very, you know, everything in the house. You don't tell people your business, you know. I can't believe I'm here today, honest to God. I have a sister right now, the one that's 8 years younger than me. She's going bald. She's got just little tiny patches of hair. She's been in the hospital, sodium. She said, oh, it's salt. I said, okay. You know, she's been drinking for 9 months fucking straight, right? And they can't drink no more. And you drink the water. So she waterlogged herself. And she's in the hospital telling them something. You know, my brother's been going back and forth to the hospital since I came into the rooms. And my mom deals with that every day. He's on oxygen. Our stomach's out to here. Yeah, I get that. But why did I make it, not him? You know, there's always a chance. Every day there's a chance. And I pray for them. It's been just I didn't do my steps maybe just as fast as some people. When I really did get serious about my steps, they fell in line with the year. They fell in line. And it was amazing. And I'm someone that didn't understand feelings. I didn't know what character defects were. I didn't know what an ego was. I didn't have an ego. I didn't know a lot of things about myself. So those steps, I couldn't write. And then when I started writing, y'all, I've got like 8 journals. But my very first journal got flooded in my car, and I carried it around in my damn car thinking I might be able to save it in a plastic bag. Until I started like growing mold on it. I guess I'm gonna have to throw it away. Now, I was so sad, my first journal, because you know, when I started writing, I had no idea that stuff. No, it's not coming from me. It's just not coming from me. This was the most amazing thing I ever got. This year on my birthday was May 31st. I don't tell you often enough how much you mean to me. All the little things you do. I'm so proud of your sobriety. And here for, and here for more to come. I'm excited to see more of your journey. Happy birthday, Rach. Love, Mom. You know, I'm a people pleaser. It's horrible sometimes, you know? And I really know that I was that kid that was kind of really not wanted at the time. My dad left me, my mom, right after I was born. And made his own family, so I always wanted that. So during my drunkenness, I lost my job. Cox Communications, I had a damn good job. I was making real good money. I had to take up a temp job at a place called Harris Connect, and it was right damn across the street from there. So every damn day, I got to sit at that bench and look at my job and look what I just lost. I did stupid shit. I wouldn't say they fired me for drinking, but I was making dumb mistakes. That I knew better. You know, just stupid mistakes. Careless stuff, right? During that time, I wanted to go to a temp agency to get into the company I'm at now, actually. My son's father was very angry about our split. We had split at that time. And so now we have my mom, me, my 3 boys. My drunk brother brought a sea bag a week later, so he's there now, and he's not going any fucking where. He's like a mushroom that grows fungus, you know? About a week after that, my sister is just a wild child, crazy. She ends up in there, so there's all of us in there, just one big crazy family. But anyways, during that time, I wanted to get a job at Anthem Healthkeepers, and my son's father was very angry, and I understand. But he told me that he would call them and tell them that I didn't graduate high school. So I had this friend a long time ago and another friend, and they took one friend's, I needed to get a job at Cox Cable, right? So they took one friend's diploma, and the other one put it on her computer and put my name on it. Boom, you graduated. All right. So I had that skeleton in my closet the whole time I worked at Cox Cable. And like I said, he was well known there and big up there, you know, and I'm slime down here and she got fired. So I went and got my GED and I was still a drunken mess. I hated math in school. I didn't pass the damn math. But I was already temping for the company, and they had hired me and called me back the next day. I already temped there for like 8 months by this time, and they called me. Whoops! I needed more of that. They called me, and somehow they knew I didn't have my damn diploma, and I had left an imprint, and they allowed me to go, and she said, look, I have a class in 6 weeks. Get your GED, do it, and let me know. And like I said, I didn't didn't pass the math, so second time I did, I passed. I got my GED at 37 years old. And it wasn't easy, man. But I graduated at an 18-year-old's level. But I did it. I became a terrible drinker. I was drinking, they were calling me Hugh Hefner because I was walking around on my road for days at a time. I was carrying my bottle around with me. If I went to the store, I had to get 5 nips just to get my ass back home, you know, and I know. But the fellowship, the family, I started doing things that I'd never, I don't think I isolated, but I didn't trust anybody. And I certainly didn't hang out with chicks. I'm a friendly person. I hung out with everybody, you know, at work or whatever, but I pushed myself, like they're going to coffee at Starbucks. Oh, that's kind of hoity-toity, you know, whatever. But I went, you know, I had to learn that I may not like everybody at the table, but I have to be a part of, I have to be a part of this family. You know, I learned that I may not like what your share is, but then I got to figure out inside why it's bothering me. You know, just a beautiful program. It's been a beautiful journey. And like I said, I did take a little longer because I sat in my damn feelings. I wanted to feel it. I wanted to know what, you know, I want to know how to get through this, you know. My first year of sobriety, I was in the drinking house. I was still buying the beer for the house. So if anybody's seen me out buying the beer, it wasn't for me. But I remember the first time I'm sitting on the couch and I was sitting there eating a half a gallon of ice cream and tears are coming down my face. I'm like, here it is. You know, I was upstairs about a week later and I was actually cleaning my room because I was so scared to clean my closet, afraid of what I'd find. And I heard my mom downstairs saying, is she singing? Is she singing? And it just, you know, I'm upstairs. She didn't know, which just made me bawl because guess what? I was singing. I was starting to feel joy. I was starting to feel things I had never felt. I didn't know when I heard the word joy in them rooms. I sat there and really thought to myself, when have I felt joy? When was the last time I felt real, true joy? You know, and I've had a lot of layers of life, a lot of layers of life. And it's just amazing. And every single day, like on the way here, I have a hard time relying on people because I didn't have no one to rely on for a long time. No one had my back. And Barb said she'd bring me, and I'm like, you know, I'm going, oh God, I see her here. And she says, relax. That was about 1 o'clock. No, okay, boy. I still got to work till 3:30. All right, I'm going to work. I'm like, oh. But she was there for me, you know. People are there for me like I've never had before in my life. And lifelong friends I keep in contact with. I've had a lot of people pass, a lot of people dying in these rooms. It's a true disease, and I don't know how much longer my brother has. He's been in and out of nursing homes, every single one in the area. It's just shutting down now. He was drinking 24/7. Somehow, I'm here today, you know, because I was drinking 24/7 too. And like I said, if I wasn't in withdrawals, I was drinking, and I get to work and I shake so bad. Chuck's not here tonight, but I get to shake so bad one day and I just threw up all over my desk. And I said, let me call that EAP line. Save my job. I'd had 2 managers ask me about my drinking and 1 manager, and I think I kind of called bullshit on this, but she said, you know, we can go downstairs and get a breathalyzer from security. My manager and her boss. Because about a week later when I you know, the head started, I started drinking even more and it was getting worse because of the anxiety, you know, and whew. Anyway, so that, you know, that all had to happen though. I mean, you know, when you read Footprints in the Sand and they say there's no, the footprints, no, they're drag marks, because I don't listen. There are freaking drag marks and a big poop once in a while, you know? All right, you want to do it your way? Go ahead. And this is, and then, you know, the more prayer, the more faith, the more willing I am, the more blessings have been coming, you know? The financial security, I'm still working on that, guys. Practice, not perfection. Keep trying to pay stuff off. I'm stuck in that little, you know, cycle. But it'll be there. I had nothing. I really had absolutely nothing. And I met a man through recovery. He lived up in Vermont. And in 11 months, I went to my sponsors and I was like, hey, you know. She said, you heard about the plane ticket, didn't you? She was the first one. I was like, yeah. So I did go get me a husband. I got, but what was great was I put my 5-month coin, you know, I know we're not supposed to do it, but this time I was really proud. Like, I want to make this stick. So hopefully this sticks. I'll put this out there, you know, my 5-month coin. We'd already been talking in this Facebook group, you know, laugh, ha ha, but I have the best jokes back and forth, you know, like a best response. And messaged me that day and said, did you know that I'm in recovery too? I'm in a recovery house in Vermont. Then we talked for 5 months straight. And I said, there is a lot of recovery here. There's a lot of recovery houses. Where he was at was just dark drugs. So he goes back out, it's just bad. So we moved down here. But I told him, you know, we're driving here. We drove a damn U-Haul 18 hours down here, right? Or however many. And I just, like, my head snapped. I just looked at him, I was like, hey, you're not gonna come between my recovery. And he's like, you know, like, just, wow. But we made it work. We do meetings together, we talk recovery, and I don't know if I could have been with someone that wasn't in recovery. I know a lot of people do, and that's fine, that's their thing, but I couldn't be with someone that drinks, because guess what? I'm gonna one-up you one night. One night, I'm gonna be like, you know what? How do you like me now? You know? Because I'm just that way. So, I do want to read something when I was going to try and write the format. I've never been able to write the format either. 4 steps. I was given all these guides. And remember, I quit school at 14. So, I didn't have those study skills and all that shit. I just blame it on that. I just don't function that way. And, but when I got this, picked this up, this is one of the journals I had laying around. It opened right up to this page, and this is October of last year, Halloween. So I thought I'd read it to y'all. October. The ghost of me sees the ghost of you. Fixing me, fixing you. The scared me had fear, doubt, darkness. Like a demon, like a vampire needs blood. My veins need the drink. It's the madness, like the doctor in Frankenstein, always behind. Today I see the ghost in you, and it haunts me enough to never see the ghost in me. Thank you.
Hey, Mike, can I say something about Rachel?
Please.
You know, during COVID, they moved one around, some people inside the room. And Rachel will hold a meeting outside the room for the people that are on the floor and other type of people. You know, and I was doing the COVID, and I think that got us over.
I think it did. I think it did, because I had like my burn my bra moment. I was like, oh damn, we've got newcomers coming. We can't be just shutting the doors down. We sat out there with we sat out there with camp chairs, and people started coming. And then when we were allowed to have people in, it was 10 in. So once we get over 10, someone would take half a meeting outside and we'd go inside. Yeah. I love the program. I've helped with the gratitude practice. I tried doing some of the work. What was that service rep? The internal or whatever, that one rep. And I was no good at it. I was not good at it. intergroup service person. Someone just decided to drop the books one day and run out the room because they got mad, right? So I was going to be the hero, and then I learned about my ego right here. I was going to be the hero. Oh, I'll take this shit on. This is simple. No one gave me no guidance, no direction, because they was all pissed off. So I go to these things and I have no idea. I was like, come on, girl, just quit trying, you know? So I'm more the underground person. I love lifting someone up out of their pits of hell, man, because that's where I come from, so. Sorry, made the floor sticky.
We'll get cleaned up. Thank you, Rachel. No.
Appreciate it.
Our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers donations to the church and supplies. The rest is given to Tidewater Intergroup, District 24, and the General Services Office. Are there any AA-related announcements? I have a couple. There are a couple flyers on the table tonight. If you would, please grab one, take it back to your home groups and post it up for us if you don't mind. But on November the 14th, Into Action, in this very room, we'll be doing our very first annual gratitude dinner. Dinner will start at 6:30. The workshop will begin at 7:30, right here in this very room. Shonda G, Carlos R, and Shelly H will be our speakers that night. What we will be talking and discussing about is our experience, strength, and hope. If you've never been to an eating meeting with this group, I strongly recommend it, because I can tell you it doesn't really matter what the topic is. You will not walk out of here without being so full that you may not eat for a week. So please come. We'd love to have you and show you some of our gratitude. I have another announcement here. Supper and a speaker, Monday night, November the 3rd. That is this coming Monday. 6 o'clock, potluck supper. 7 o'clock, speaker meeting. Jack D. from Baltimore will be the speaker. It is the Simple Actions Group at Ghent United Methodist Church. And again, that is a supper and a speaker. 6 o'clock, speaker to start at 7. If you haven't done that meeting, when they do this supper and a speaker meeting every year, they go out on a limb and they bring in kind of one of the big dog speakers from the circuit. Strongly recommend it. The last two I've been to have been fantastic. So if you get a chance, hopefully we'll see you at that meeting Monday. I've got a flyer. If anybody would like more information, please come take a picture.
Get there early if you want parking.
Yeah, that spread is not as good as the spread they have here.
Valid point, Ralphie. Thank you, Ralphie. Thank you.
2 hour parking. Yeah. If you're lucky.
Are there any other related announcements? Steve. Yeah,
the gratitude breakfast, which is November the 8th, the weekend before, comes Saturday morning, and it's at Bayside, I think it is. Is it Bayside or Bayside?
Yeah, Bayside Presbyterian.
Bayside Presbyterian. I don't have a copy of the flyer, but it's on the intergroup website. And we bring speakers in from all four districts to share little anecdotes about gratitude.
Can you come and help me, sir?
Okay. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Got one.
Yes, ma'am.
Rachel, I'm Clark.
Hey, Rachel.
Four-step workshop, which is, I was talking to my sponsor about doing four-step over again. You know, after a couple of years, you can do some refreshing, but there's a four-step workshop November 6th at 10 a.m.